I want to talk a little bit about what you already heard about the manna, maybe from a slightly different perspective. Just to give you a little bit of placement in history, this story that you heard about the manna and about the Israelites complaining in the wilderness and all of that, that happened, according to Exodus, in the very next chapter after they crossed the Red Sea. So that means that the people of Israel, the Hebrew children, had witnessed all the miracles of the 10 plagues, where God basically humbled Egypt, humbled Pharaoh, so that Pharaoh finally let the people go, that they had left Egypt. They'd actually taken a lot of their wealth with them. We remember they borrowed all of this jewelry and all of these things as they left, and so they pillaged Egypt. They ran up to the Red Sea and, of course, got stopped because of the water. God did the miracle of parting of the Red Sea. The Israelites were able to cross, and the army of Pharaoh was destroyed in the Red Sea. They had seen all of these amazing, amazing miracles. They'd seen the power of God. And then in the very next chapter, the children of Israel complained, "Did you bring us out here to kill us?" After they'd seen all of these amazing miracles of power to bring them out, and right away, already, they're losing faith, and they're whining and complaining. And then, according to the Apostle Paul, he says that the children of Israel were captives, were slaves in Egypt for over 400 years. That's a little less than twice as long as this country's been an independent nation. They were slaves in that country for that amount of time. They had prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed for deliverance. They finally got deliverance. And now here they're saying, "Oh, that we could just go back to Egypt. Oh, that we could die there rather than out here in the wilderness." Well, I spent quite a bit of my life in Montana, and it wasn't the pretty part of Montana. It wasn't the part where the river runs through it. It's the eastern part of the state, and it is kind of desert out there. It's flat. There's hardly any trees. They get 10 or less inches of rainfall and snowfall a year. And so it's desert-like, if nothing else, and it's deadly. If you get stuck out there, especially in the days before cell phones, if you get stuck out there, you can get hungry really fast. You can get thirsty really fast. Living in the desert is deadly business. So I understand why the Israelites were complaining, because they had left. And even if they'd only been gone for a few days, they probably had already eaten up most of the food that they had with them at this point in time. It didn't look like they were moving anywhere. After they crossed the Red Sea, they kind of just settled in for a while to organize and figure out what to do next. So you can understand why they were complaining. But again, they were complaining after they'd seen all of this amazing stuff that God had done. And the interesting thing is that God doesn't get angry. God doesn't, this time at least, talk about punishing them and ending the existence of the people. God says to Moses and to Aaron, "Okay, I heard what the people said. They'll have their food. They'll have their food." And they got it. They got this stuff called manna, which none of us really still even knows a lot what it is. It was the kind of a bread-like substance that would just appear in the morning. As the dew would evaporate real quickly once the sun came up, then this would be left behind. I think our communion bread, those little wafers that we use, is meant to actually kind of imitate manna, that sort of flat, white, just a little bit of a flavor to it, but not much. And so that's why that bread was designed that way. But it was there for them. And then the story even says, and on top of that, God said, and then in the evening, there'll be quail. So they would get their bread, they'd get their carbs in the morning, and then they would get their protein in the evening. And God answered their cry, their prayer, and showed them that he could do it, but also that God listens. God hears when people cry to him. Now, maybe that wasn't what they wanted. Maybe they didn't want this manna. And I think about that. Can you imagine eating manna every morning and quail every evening for 40 years every single day? Now, I like pizza. I like pizza a lot. But I can't imagine eating pizza every day for 40 years without kind of going crazy. So God answered their prayer, but it probably wasn't exactly the way they asked or were thinking God would give them the prayer or the answer. But God did give them the answer. We can do a lot of things with the gospel or with that story, and you know, Pastor Jen talked a little bit about being hungry and what it feels like to be hungry. I've been hungry but never starving. I imagine maybe all of us at one time or another have chosen not to eat or didn't eat for a while, so we know at least what a hunger pang feels like when our stomach is empty. But I've never starved. God is certainly showing us in this lesson that hunger is not, starvation is not part of what God created us for, and it's not part of how he made the world for us. But I'm not sure that's the only thing in this particular story. I think there's also a strong word about those things for which we hunger. The Hebrew children hungered for freedom. They had been slaves for 400 plus years. They wanted to be able to leave the slavery, to leave the burden of the work that pharaohs were imposing upon them, to go out and become this people that their tradition and the promises of God had said they would be, that they would become a great nation, they would be a light to the world, that they would have a place they could call their own, and none of this was happening. And so they hungered for that. And even though they probably didn't understand how God was doing it, God was feeding their hunger and giving them what they wanted, but on God's terms. My ancestors, when they came over here back in the 1840s, were hungering for religious freedom. Back in those days, the Kaiser of Germany had decided that he was going to unite the country around the Reformed Church. And if you were Lutheran or if you were Catholic or whoever, whatever your faith might be, you had to give it up and basically become Reformed Christian. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. That's not what I'm saying. But the Lutherans that were part of my family, they wanted to be Lutheran. And they wanted to worship the way that Lutherans worship. And so they hungered for that. They could have gone to jail. They could have wound up in the armies, which back in those days kind of meant you were cannon fodder. All kinds of things could have happened to them if they didn't do what the Kaiser was telling them. But they chose instead to feed their hunger, to climb on board seven pretty rickety boats and sail across the Atlantic for a couple of months, eating probably really garbage food in that whole time. But they were hungering for religious freedom. One of the boats were lost. This hunger cost them a tremendous amount. They had to leave behind their families. They had to leave behind whatever wealth they might have had and come and settle in this country. But they finally had their hunger filled by being able to come here. And I'm going to guess that many of our ancestors went through something similar to that, because they came to this country also looking for freedom of one kind or another. Sadly, others have been brought to this country not free, but as slaves themselves. But that, at least in my family, that hunger for religious freedom was met. That hunger for the American life was met. I came to this part of the world because I had a hunger to be a grandpa. I wanted to be near my grandkids. I wanted to see them grow up. I wanted to have an influence in their lives. And it hasn't been all pleasant. As Jen and I were talking about earlier, I had to leave most of my family and my friends behind because they're all out in the West Coast. A pandemic hit. It's kind of really lonely when you don't even have family you can hang around with, except for one small group. But I had that hunger. And God apparently heard my cries around my hunger and gave me the opportunity to come here. Well, what about you all? You know, I don't know any of you really from anyone else. I assume maybe you know each other somewhat. So I'm not going to put words and thoughts into your heads, but I am going to guess that maybe you have a hunger too. And I'm not talking about what you're going to have for lunch later today when worship is over. I'm talking about that thing that you desperately wish for your grandbabies, that you wish the world could be, that you wish the church could be, that you wish America could be, that will make the life of your children and your grandchildren better. Whatever that wish might be, I want my grandbabies to have a good life too. I'm not just wanting to fill my needs, I want them to be taken care of as well. And the Exodus reading shows us that God listens to those prayers, that God listens to those cries, that God hears us when we express our need and our fears and our hopes, and doesn't ignore us. Now, God is always God, and God will answer our needs the way God needs to and wants to, because God knows better than we do. But God still listens, and God still hears, and God still answers. What is your hunger? Only you can answer that question. I can't. But God knows as well. And I encourage you, like the children of Israel, like Moses, like my ancestors who came over here from Germany, share your hunger with God. Trust God to hear you. Trust God to give you and all of us. Because I want everybody's grandbabies to have a good life, not just mine. Trust God to give us what we need as we need it. And then one other reminder. We're Lutherans. So at some point in time, we really, really, really need to hear the gospel. We really need to hear that word of grace, not just possibilities, not just even the law that's disguised as love and compassion, but we need to hear the word of grace. And the word of grace is still, I think, the same one that it has always been. But to use the words of today, God hungers for you as well. My simplified reading of Martin Luther is that his hunger was he was desperately trying to find a God who loved him rather than was an angry God trying to find a way to eventually send him to hell. That was kind of his angst in his lifetime, is how can I appease an angry God? How can I make God stop being angry with me and trust and love me and cherish me as a child? And my simplified answer that Luther came up with was simply, Luther discovered that God wasn't angry, that God is love, that in Jesus Christ, God is inviting us to be part of his family forever, that God isn't making a list and checking it twice, ready to find out who he gets to send to hell because we've blown it, but that God is graceful and forgiving, and God is constantly saying, I desire you, I cherish you, I want you to be with me forever. That's grace. God hungers for each and every one of us. The Old Testament writer says, taste and see that the Lord is good. God is good. And God knows how much we hunger for his love and his grace. Amen.